Over 3,000 women and children enter a domestic violence shelter each year in our county. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Laura's House continues to be the only state-approved comprehensive domestic violence agency in South County. Good evening. You're listening to Collage, a weekly public affairs show on FM 88.5 KSBR. I'm Dawn Camber. Our guests are from Laura's House. We have Board Chair Wayne Pinnell and Clinical Director Amy Borst. And joining us is my guest co-host, KSBR Air Talent Joe D. Will Amy please explain what domestic violence is?
Hi, Dawn. Thanks for having us again. Domestic violence, I would describe it as an extreme form of an unhealthy relationship. It's actually a pattern that one person uses to obtain power or control over another person, and it can include emotional, physical, and sexual abuse. It's actually a devastating social problem in that it does not discriminate based on race, culture, nationality, or gender. It affects individuals as well as families and eventually the community as a whole.
So explain the people that are involved with Laura's House that actually are the clients of Laura's House.
The clients of Laura's House really span a number of different, we have people coming in that are on all levels of the domestic violence spectrum, if you will. We have clients that come in that feel that something is wrong. They're not sure. They're not actually identifying the problem as domestic violence necessarily, but they're coming in and learning about what that means and what that can look like. I think we had talked last time about name-calling being a form of abuse, that a lot of people don't recognize that. There's a lot of psychological forms of abuse that can take place as well. So we have the whole spectrum of people who are trying to figure out what's going on, what's not working in their relationship, and being able to, because of our services, identify that there is some abusive behavior that is perhaps occurring. And we also have clients who obviously need emergency shelter that are fleeing for their lives.
Can you give us the most common forms of domestic violence that you see?
I'd say we see a lot of emotional. I think the easiest to diagnose, so to speak, is the physical abuse. And that's where I think it becomes a little bit more complicated, because the psychological and the emotional domestic violence behaviors are a lot harder to identify. So I would say we see a lot of emotional, because emotional pretty much spans, even when there is physical abuse, there typically is emotional abuse as well. So that's the most common form that we see.
Give us some examples.
Of emotional abuse? That could be, oh my goodness, again, I mentioned the name calling. It could be controlling behavior as far as, and especially where we're at with technology nowadays, there are other forms of abuse that can happen through texting, the internet, Facebook, controlling, as far as limiting, restricting contact with family and friends, disqualifying if an event occurs and kind of disqualifying the event that happened, that it didn't really happen that way, you didn't understand it that way.
Well, let me ask you this, Amy. I love the way you present your list of services, the way you put them together in that acronym HOPE. You talk about healing, you talk about outreach, you talk about prevention, you talk about empowerment. Can you really get involved in prevention? Do you get involved in a lot of the prevention, maybe nip it in the bud?
As an agency, yes, definitely. And I would say that's probably our biggest goal, to kind of break those patterns, that cycle of abuse. A lot of times our clients find, when they really explore and process the current abuse, that there are patterns throughout their lifetime. And again, maybe not just an intimate partner relationship, but they may see it in their family of origin. They may see it in their extended family ongoing. So it's really an interesting thing that I think just having that educational component allows our clients to just arming themselves with that information allows them to make different choices. And a lot of times it comes down to setting boundaries, knowing what they want, what will work for them, and moving forward in that and not engaging in that back and forth that can sometimes happen with abusive relationships.
Yeah, so your goal isn't necessarily to separate the person from their partner and get them onto a new life. You can actually prevent some of the activities and the actions that could lead up to a more serious domestic violence case.
Absolutely. I would absolutely say that there's hope for that, and it is one of our ideal situations is when we do have a couple that's interested that feels that maybe they're struggling. Couples therapy is so imperative, but oftentimes what I have found as a therapist is that couples engage in couples counseling usually when something more serious has happened. It's not always as a preventative, think there's something going on here. We should probably address these issues. But I definitely think there is a way, when one person changes how they interact with another person, it automatically changes that relationship and shifts that. And it's the best way to determine if the other person can roll with that change or accommodate that change or how they're going to respond. And then it leaves that person who's made the change in the first place to decide, okay, so this may not work for me. This may not be the person for me at this time.
Wayne, how are we doing in terms of numbers of people impacted by domestic violence? Is it going up, going down, or remaining the same?
Well, interesting. The reality is the numbers are going up, and whether that's the result of actual cases of domestic violence or the changing tide of people being willing to talk about it. I think you saw the same thing with a various number of diseases over the year. There's a little bit of an embarrassment, a family issue, peer group pressure, and it takes organizations like Laura's House and the programs out there to allow people the opportunity to recognize that this is an issue and I need to report it. So whether it's going through calls to the police departments or calls to the hotline at Laura's House or people really showing up for shelter protection, the numbers, unfortunately, are going up. And one thing I've challenged the board over the number of years I've been on the board is, you know, I'd really like to see Laura's House grow to be big enough to put itself out of business, which is really, you know, a monumental task because each year we see the need for more and more people. That 3,000 people that were mentioned up on the front end, that's a growing number each year. And, you know, I hate to think that that number will be larger next year, but most likely it will be.
Let's talk about the services Laura's House offers.
Well, you know, at the core level, I think people would most know the agency for the emergency shelter. In 2011, we had a pretty visible capital campaign to actually tear down the existing shelter we had for a number of years and rebuild it with a new state-of-the-art facility. That one thing it did was it increased our capacity about 93%. And, you know, there's a lot of days, again, unfortunately, that shelter's full. In addition to that shelter, when people graduate from the shelter program or return to their life or move on to something else, we do have a transitional housing facility where people can stay for a longer term, not long term, but a longer term opportunity to pay some low-income housing-type rental rates and, again, try to get their life back on track. But the counseling that Amy talked about is done through the counseling center. And really, one of the things we talked about earlier about education and prevention, I think one of the strongest programs we have out there to catch this early is the focus on teens. And so with the HEART program, which is an acronym, which I have to refer to every now and then, it's the Healthy Emotions and Attitudes in Relationships for Teens. We have speakers that go out to high schools, junior colleges, organizations, and really talk to the teens and explain to them what domestic violence looks like, because they may be early in the cycle. Mom and dad are doing stuff at home that they never realized was maybe not right. It's just the way it's always been. They start dating, and boyfriend, girlfriend is applying different types of pressure, whether it's emotionally or socially, peer groups, financial, all these things come into play, and they don't realize necessarily that they're getting off to a bad start in a bad relationship, and it's really enlightening for them to hear what this really is.
Well, explain some of these little these examples of how people don't realize that they're maybe doing something that could be in the realm of domestic violence.
Well, I think, you know, if you're talking the example I was giving with teen dating, you know, when boyfriend, girlfriend, and let's put it on the boy side for the moment, if the boy is really putting pressure on the girl to do different things, get involved in different things, whether it's early sexual relationships, drugs, or other types of things, that they're trying to respond to that. They think that might be okay. Maybe they haven't had the educational point to realize, well, wait, there's pressure going on here that is not normal.
Wayne, is there a correlation between domestic violence and, say, drugs?
You know, I think there's a number of different relationships you can find direct links or indirect links. I'm a financial guy by day, so one thing I look at is where does the financial aspect come in? And what's interesting about domestic violence is it doesn't have an ethnic tie. It does not have a economic tie. There are people across lives, ages, backgrounds, diversities, involvements. And in really when you look at domestic violence as a whole, Amy's conversation up at the front end, it's a pretty broad topic to bring down to some pretty pinpoint examples. We've had people from really well-off economic situations in one form of mental, I guess, frustration that it can cause really is just tying up the credit cards and not letting the person be able to go live their normal life. They can't go anywhere. They can't spend any money, and they're just fully under control, which is this idea of what domestic violence is about.
Now, you mentioned safe houses. Is that obviously we can't disclose locations and all that, but how do you go about creating a safe house?
Well, I mean, our safe house, and Amy can jump in on this too, where we do have a location. You're right, we can't disclose where that is. That is the primary shelter that we have. That's typically women and children. It's designed around, the new shelter is designed around different family type orientations. So there's plenty of rooms for, mom and multiple kids, or we've got the handicap space and whatnot. We do have men that go through the program too that seek shelter, because this is not a one-way thing. This works the other way as well. Now, in the shelter facility itself, we can't bring men in that are victims. We try to keep that separate. So we'll have other locations that are, we use a safety net title for those, but those are other locations we contract with to get them checked in for their safety.
But we want to point out, when we talk about a shelter, many people might think a shelter is not aesthetically good looking. In the past, I've been to a shelter when it was spanking brand new, and I understand you make it bright and fun and livable and uplifting.
Well, the shelter, it was interesting going through the capital campaign a couple of years ago, because this, in a secret location and a secret project, the difficulty you have in raising money is you can't show people the project. So we had to do a lot of things with pictures and design boards and that type of thing to show people what this is really like. And I remember comments about the architect's drawings. People go, well, this place looks like a McMansion, I think somebody said once. And the shelter is very nice. What it's really meant to be is a safe place, a comfortable place. It's got all the full amenities from kitchen to Wi-Fi and TV and nice bedrooms and bathrooms. And it is meant to be and feel like a home, not I think what people sometimes view in quotes as a shelter, which sounds like a desperate, dark place.
So, Amy, go through the process of how a person may end up in a shelter. When we're talking about a shelter, we're talking about a beautiful, uplifting place. But explain the process that a person might take to get into one of these.
Well, the process is quite detailed. We do, as Wayne had mentioned, we do have a lot of procedures in place safety-wise to ensure that the way that we're bringing clients into our program maintains their safety and the safety for all the employees at the agency as well. So we do have a lot of different protocols in place that we follow and adhere to. If I were to describe somebody who is coming in, who's kind of at the end of their rope, so to speak, with the situation, whatever that looks like, I think a lot of times we see that it's by the encouragement of a family member or a friend, and it's really kind of interesting because it's almost like the timing needs to be just right, and that's why whenever somebody reaches out for help, we try to bring them in as quickly as we can, because if more time elapses, a lot of times people, it's not that big of a deal. Time heals everything. It's one of the long time phrases, but it's true in this respect that it's, when there is time between a major incident, it gives people time to kind of renegotiate and think, okay, maybe this won't happen again, maybe it'll be different. So I really think that the families that are coming to us, there are typically a number of different things that are going wrong for them. So it isn't always just the relationship. It can be an impact of maybe they're losing their housing. Maybe things have become so challenging that they've lost their job because the abuser is targeting, stalking them at work. There could be a number of things, but usually it's something that is life-altering that the person is just ready for something different, something safer.
In case you just joined us, you are listening to Collage, a weekly public affairs show on FM 88.5 KSBR. I'm Dawn Camber. Over 3,000 women and children enter a domestic violence shelter each year in our county. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and Laura's House continues to be the only state-approved comprehensive domestic violence agency in South County. Our guests are from Laura's House. We have Board Chair Wayne Pennell and Clinical Director Amy Borst, and joining us is my guest co-host, Air Talent Joe D. Well, Wayne, explain why you got involved with Laura's House.
You know, it's interesting. When Laura's House first started in 1994, a friend of mine asked me, who was one of the early board members, probably in 1995, if I'd be interested in helping because they needed some help with the finances. So when I got involved with the board the first time, it was to come in as treasurer. So my day job is a CPA, so I came in as the treasurer, as the natural linkage there. I spent almost 5 years on the board at that time, and then I took several years of a break. And the second time, Margaret Baston, the executive director, contacted me and asked me if I'd want to come back to the board. So generally, I tell the story. I joined the board the first time with my brain, the second time with my heart, because I understood more about what was going on and with the large issue that we really are dealing with and how many ways we can reach out and help people.
Well, talk about it. Talk about how you feel about the organization.
I think it's a tremendous organization. It's grown a lot. Its early stages were fairly grassroots in terms of how we went about getting money. The shelter that we originally had lasted 18 years. It was held up, by rubber bands at some points. But it really was stretched and pulled together. And I think the organization has gotten much more professional, much more recognized in the county, in the state, and to some degree outside the state. We've also been able just to attract a much stronger group of funders, whether it be personal individuals or foundations and corporate giving.
Well, I look at your website, Wayne, and I see that you have a lot of fundraising activities throughout the year. And that, tell us a little bit about some of those fundraisers. I know you just completed a couple of them.
Well, we have a number of opportunities to come about. We have some foundations or groups that will put on fundraisers for us. Those are the best ones. It's the least amount of work for us. We just had a golf event that was done just a few weeks ago that raised money for us, basically having people come play foursomes and go to the silent auctions. Other events that are dinners, wine and dine events we've done a couple of years. We've got events at the thrift store just to raise awareness, but also opportunities for lots of things in silent auctions and else.
I just wanted to add that I think what's nice about our fundraisers, too, is they span over a lot of different activities. So there's actually something called a hike and hoedown in October, Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and that's a fun opportunity to go hiking and then, believe it or not, dancing afterwards in the park. So,
and also, you have a resale store.
Right. And so the resale store was something that really started with the first store, which was called Laura's House of Treasures. Now it's our Laura's House Resale Store. It's in Lake Forest, California. We take donations of, gently used clothing and like. We're not looking for people's, it's not the next step to the garbage trash. We really want things that are really good condition, clothes, small household type things. We unfortunately don't take furniture and those types of things right now. It's too big for us to handle. But the store has done tremendously well in that location the last several years it's been there. We are looking at the possibility of adding another one or two stores over the current and short term, looking at where those geographies might be to best serve the communities.
Who are your typical clients?
For the stores?
No. Who are your typical clients for Laura's House? Is it typically a single mother, a single woman, a single man?
All of the above. Amy can probably give you some better statistics on there, but as I mentioned earlier, they come from all walks of life, all demographics.
I would agree with Wayne. I think what we see It is interesting, actually, what we see in the shelter as far as cycles are concerned. So, for instance, what we really noticed was when the school year ended this year, we saw a lot of families who needed shelter who had older kids, school-aged children. I'd say during the school year, we have a lot of families who are probably younger before they've reached that school age. That is definitely an element that I think, in particular, our moms who come into the shelters consider is what's best for my children, wanting to keep them in school for the year, not disrupting their lives as much as possible. It's interesting. But, yeah, I'd say a lot of families.
And you talk one-on-one with many of them.
Yes.
Explain what you try to do to get them out of this cycle.
Well, really what we try to do is we try to offer, when focusing on our shelter services, we try to offer a different way of functioning. We try to offer a lot of supportive groups, a lot of groups that acknowledge what they've experienced and how to kind of work through that, process that. We don't have a lot of time at the shelter to work with our clients. We have 45 days. So we really try to have as much of an impact, provide as much education as possible. But what we also have really worked hard to do over the past couple years with the new shelter is we've created an evening program in addition to the daytime program. So now what we do is we try to encourage the moms to have, we have a group called Family Fun Night, which I really think is a great opportunity for the moms to get together with their children, spend quality time, learn how to participate in really in activities that cost nothing, playing games, making their own games, so that hopefully that can carry through and it really encourage them to have quality family, positive family time moving forward as well.
Amy, let me ask you this. The domestic violence laws have changed since Laura's House started back in, 1994, right? And so what is your relationship now with local law enforcement as it relates to reporting? Because there are some very strict laws out there.
And actually, we're seeing the laws change even more. There are quite a few laws that are in the process of being passed, hopefully, that pertain to work safety in the workplace, that women or men who are involved in domestic violence relationships, that they are not penalized for that, and that the workplace provides as much as they can accommodate, basically that they're not firing people for something that's really out of their control. We're finding that a lot of workplaces support people who decide that they need to go into shelter by holding on to their positions for them. So we've seen a lot of positive changes, and I'd say as far as law enforcement is concerned, we've had a nice working relationship, I'd say, in general with law enforcement throughout Orange County. I think there's definitely we try to make it their job as easy as possible, so we try to give our information to different departments, the different sheriff department locations, so that they can, if there's a situation, we can hopefully intervene, connect somebody or both people to services to try to get help and work through and eventually stop the unhealthy interactions.
Yeah, so with your clients, do you coach them and give them some education regarding the laws that you have an obligation to do some reporting of the incident
absolutely.
It's gone that far?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually one of the first things that we do. We inform everybody. It's part of our informed consent, what our responsibility is as an agency. We inform everybody and kind of explain what that means. And we also let them know in those situations where we may have to file a report. So we're that way we can process that with them and support them and let them know what that may look like and what that means down the road. And that also pertains a lot to the child abuse reports that we have to file.
You know, in that regard, too, we've got a legal department that helps people. They go through some questionnaires, understand what's going on with them, go through some safety planning. We work with several large law firms in Orange County that provide really pro bono services to help out the clients going through filing restraining orders or other court appearances. So there's really a full support service from the counseling through the legal side of things once they're into the shelter program.
And when it comes to domestic violence, we're talking primarily adults going through it, but adults with children. How do you handle the children in these situations?
You know, I think that's where I'd say most everybody has a soft spot for the children. Everyone's hearts go out to the children. We really try to, well, for instance, in our shelter program, we have a therapeutic preschool. So there's a lot of opportunity for us to work with the moms, work with the children, and kind of evaluate maybe where they are developmentally. Again, link them to services if there's a need to be linked to medical or other special needs type services. So we really have a comprehensive program for the children as well. And a lot of it just comes down to validating them that maybe what they've experienced is not what they, ideally what they would have experienced, and showing them, again, role modeling a different way of interacting, a healthier way of interacting. We see a lot of children that, when they come to us, they struggle. And it's really kind of remarkable to see at the end of the 45 days how much growth can happen even with the children.
Go over some common situations that are considered domestic violence that people may not be aware that they are.
I think that's a really good statement, question. I would say, for me, I feel like I've already said this, so I'm sorry for repeating myself, but I really feel like the name-calling is a big common scenario that can fall under that abusive category. Name-calling, just degrading, embarrassing, controlling. Again, with technology today, there are so many safety issues that we have to consider even when we bring somebody into our shelter because of the ability to, I don't even know, remember the correct term, but for cell phones to trace, track people where they're going. I know that there are apps that do that. There's a lot of controlling behaviors that can come into play, looking through cell phone records, seeing who they're calling, who they're talking to, maybe sometimes making accusations of affairs, cheating, things that aren't actually taking place.
Is it primarily men violating women, or is it indeed the other way around? And what percentage would you say of each?
Well, what's really kind of interesting about that is there people. I'd say a lot of the studies have been showing for years that men, really the domestic violence where the male is the victim, is just underreported. So it's really hard to say if there is a vast difference, because I don't think the statistics are accurate as far as what's actually happening when the male is the victim. And the other piece of that is we see a lower rate of males seeking assistance.
Wayne, how can people help your organization, Laura's House?
Well, there's a lot of ways to get involved, from volunteering time, certainly making monetary donations, coming out to the various events. And I think the first thing might be just to go out to the Laura's House website, which is laurashouse.org. Joe mentioned that earlier. There's a lot of things out there that are already listed in terms of different fundraisers and community events that are coming up. There are spots right on the website to go ahead and make donations if you're so inclined to do that. We have a great board right now. We're about 20 board members. We have we're always looking for another board member or two, because we have time limits on some of those things, so we do rotate board members periodically. So our board members are challenged to go out and find other board members to help fill specific tasks. And
what are some of the jobs that you do as board members?
Well, our board is probably not too different than most boards of directors for organizations. We certainly help with the overall strategy for the long-term growth of the organization. We are very involved in the fundraising aspects as board members for this organization and many nonprofits. Typically, a board member is given a give or get requirement, which basically means, pony up some money or help find some people that will. And so we are, ambassadors to the community, if you will, and trying to find those other people that will have a heart for the organization and bring their wallet with them.
You have been listening to Collage, a weekly public affairs show on FM 88.5 KSBR. I'm Dawn Camber. Over 3,000 women and children enter a domestic violence shelter each year in our county, and October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Laura's House continues to be the only state-approved comprehensive domestic violence agency in South County, and our guests have been Laura's House Board Chair Wayne Pennell and Clinical Director Amy Borst, and joining us has been my guest co-host, KSBR Air Talent Joe D. Please join us next week for another show right here on FM 88.5 KSBR.